This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Joining me today is Phil Marshall from the University of Oxford. Hello and welcome to the Jodcast.
Hi there, thanks for having me.
And you have a very intriguing talk that you're going to give about weighing galaxies.
Yeah, that's right. It sounds a bit crazy, but it's true. For a living, I weigh galaxies. The talk this afternoon isn't about what we can learn from the weight of galaxies, though. It's rather you have to weigh the galaxies on the way to doing something even more interesting.
Ooh, I'm very intrigued. Well, can we start off with actually how you go about weighing a galaxy before we get to the more interesting part?
Yeah, there's a number of ways you can weigh a galaxy. It's not easy. You can imagine looking at a galaxy with a telescope, and all you see is its the light coming from its stars. So the easiest thing you could think of doing is maybe adding up all the light from a galaxy, measuring its total brightness, and then figuring out how many stars you would need to make that brightness. But that turns out not to be so useful, because then you only get to estimate the mass in stars. And we think that most of the mass in galaxies is actually in dark matter. So there's all this matter in galaxies that we can't see in telescopes, but instead have to figure out that's there by other means.
And how would you go about doing that?
Well, one of the ways we can do it is by measuring the speeds of stars in galaxies. If you imagine stars buzzing around inside galaxies, the reason why they don't escape is because they're held in by the gravitational pull of the rest of the matter in the galaxy, including the dark matter. So if you can measure, for example, the maximum speed of a star in a galaxy, that tells you something about how much mass is there to keep it in. But even that's not how I weigh galaxies. I use something called gravitational lensing. So this is using an effect that was predicted by Einstein. He was thinking about gravity and figured out that the way gravity works is that that massive objects bend the space around them. So you can imagine a gravitational field being like a rubber sheet with a bowling ball in the middle of it, something like that. And so if you roll a marble then around that sheet, then it will follow a curved path rather than a straight line. And light does the same thing on its way past a massive galaxy. And so what we do is we find examples of massive galaxies in surveys of the sky. We go looking for massive galaxies. And very occasionally, maybe 1 in 1,000 times, something like that, we find a massive galaxy that has another galaxy way off in the background behind it. And what we see in that case is not two galaxies, a bright one in the foreground and a faint one in the background. What we see is a bright galaxy with a weird pattern of arcs around it, arc-shaped distorted images. And what's happening is that the light from the background galaxy is getting deflected as it goes past the foreground galaxy.
So there's a very famous example of this, of the Einstein ring. Is that a gravitationally lensed galaxy?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we know a number of Einstein rings now. They were originally thought to be very rare, but it turns out the deeper you look at one of these gravitational lenses, the more likely you are to see very faint light coming from the background galaxy, and you often see long arcs that connect up to make rings. So what I do is I collect examples of this, of these gravitational lenses, and then make very detailed measurements of these Einstein rings, matching up all the pixels with predictions that I make, given my understanding of what background galaxies should look like if they're not lensed, and then manage to reconstruct where all the mass in the foreground galaxy has to be. And then you add all that up and you've weighed a galaxy.
So when you said you had to find evidence of these in surveys, does that mean you have to go through a lot of data, these quite rare events?
Yeah, they are very rare. So 1 in 1,000 massive galaxies is acting as a lens. It happens to have a faint blue galaxy sitting behind it, or perhaps a AGN or a quasar or something like that in the distant universe sitting behind it. So 1 in 1,000 massive galaxies, and massive galaxies are already quite rare in the universe. So yeah, typically we have to look at a lot of sky in order to find an example of a gravitational lens like this.
And is there any way to predict this before this occurs and you know exactly where to look, or is it a case of just going through a lot of data hunting?
We can help ourselves out a little bit. I mean, if you imagine just taking lots of pictures of the sky and looking at them by eye, that would take a very, very long time. It has been done in some cases, but it's very time consuming, and perhaps we can speed it up by, instead of looking at entire images, we can automatically detect where the bright massive galaxies are and then just go and look at little images of those to see whether there are patterns of arcs around them. And that's typically what we do.
Okay, thank you for that. And then when you're weighing the galaxy, you have to have a lot of information about the foreground galaxy. Mm-hmm. Is that mainly through models, or do you have other observations that support that before you can get predictions on the galaxy that you're weighing behind it?
So when we do the weighing part, it's usually with very high quality data, very sharp images from the Hubble Space Telescope. They give the best weight measurements. And there, almost all of the information about the weight of the galaxy is coming from that data. The difficult part is extracting that information. And yes, we do that by making a model of the foreground galaxy and also a model of the background galaxy, and using that model to predict what the image looks like. And once we've got a predicted image, we can compare it with the observed image. And if it fits, then we know we're onto something. And if it doesn't, we have to throw it out and try another one. And when we get computers to try many, many, many different models, changing the parameters of the model until we find a model that fits really well, and then we look at how much mass that model has.
May I ask just how massive we're talking of these galaxies?
Yep. So we're typically talking about massive elliptical galaxies. So these are very old systems that have been built up over many billions of years by the merger of lots of smaller galaxies. And they typically have something like 1,000 billion times the mass of the Sun in stars. And then on top of that, there's dark matter as well. So these really massive galaxies can be 10 to the power of 13 instead of 10 to the power of 12 times the mass of the Sun.
So by that you mean one with 13 zeros afterwards.
Exactly.
That's a very, very heavy galaxy.
10,000 billion times the mass of the Sun. Yeah.
I'm just trying to imagine that in terms of elephants. I don't think that will...
I think what's a good comparison? Our own galaxy, the Milky Way, is maybe 10 times less massive than one of these massive galaxies. So these are real monster galaxies.
So what type of galaxies are these elliptical galaxies?
Well, they're a bit different from our Milky Way, which is a spiral galaxy. When you look up in the sky, you see a disk of stars. That's because we're living in a sort of flattened, plane-shaped spiral galaxy. But these ellipticals are more like rugby balls, and they're mostly yellow in color when you make a color image. Astronomers call them red galaxies, but they look yellow. And they contain almost only... old stars, so low mass old stars, a bit like our Sun.
And you said when you weighed them, you get the mass of the stars and then the mass of the dark matter. Hmm. Is that both in the weight of when you've done the Einstein lensing?
Yeah, exactly, because we're doing is looking at the deflection of light, and Einstein was telling us that the only thing that matters when you're figuring out how much light is deflected is how much mass there's there, how much gravity there is. And so it doesn't matter whether that mass is in the form of stars or in the form of dark matter. It all behaves the same way. So when we make a gravitational lensing measurement of a galaxy, we're measuring total mass on the sky.
Could you also work out the mass of the stars and then work out how much dark matter is in these galaxies?
Yeah, so that's one of the things we do. We look at the fraction of mass that's in dark matter. And then it's interesting to compare that fraction between galaxies of different types, and also galaxies at different distances. And the reason it's interesting to look at galaxies at different distances is because in astronomy, when you look at more distant objects, you're seeing them as they were a longer time ago, because the light takes longer to travel to you from a more distant object. So we can go back in time and look at how the fraction of mass in dark matter changed over time.
What do you find out when you do this?
Well, these massive ellipticals are already very old. So for the lenses that we've found so far, we don't see much change in the fraction of mass that's in stars compared to dark matter. It looks as though they formed a very long time ago, these massive galaxies, and then are just sort of sitting there glowing quietly, and occasionally eating their neighbours, but but not really changing much. The really exciting time in a massive galaxy's life was maybe the first half of the universe's age. And to find massive galaxies back then at such large distances, we're going to need some new surveys with different telescopes. So we're hoping that some very distant lens galaxies will be found by the Herschel telescope, an infrared space telescope that's discovering things that might turn out to be lenses right now. So that's something to watch out for, lenses from Herschel.
Ooh, that sounds intriguing. When you weigh these galaxies, you said that was just a means to the end of finding out more intriguing stuff. Is there any other stuff that you find out instead of looking at also galaxies at different times?
Absolutely. So it's already interesting just on its own to look at the mass of galaxies and how galaxies have changed over time, to understand how galaxies form and evolve. But it turns out that with particular kinds of gravitational lenses, you can go one step further. You can model all the mass, figure out how much the galaxy weighs, and then make a prediction for one extra observable thing. And that observable thing that's especially interesting to me and to others is the time delay between images. So I said that these lenses cause arc-shaped images around the massive galaxy. You see these arcs. Well, these arcs are images of a background galaxy. And sometimes that background galaxy has a supermassive black hole in the middle of it. And if that supermassive black hole is feeding, if there's gas falling into it, then it will glow very, very brightly, and we'll call it a quasar, or at least an active galactic nucleus. So we can see these supermassive black holes all the way across the universe. It's fantastic. But most interesting for me is that they not only glow very brightly, but they flicker in time. If you imagine gas falling into a supermassive black hole, it doesn't just stream in smoothly. It sort of falls in lumps, and you know, there's variations in the amount of gas falling in. And so the brightness of quasars changes with time. So if you can imagine a flickering background light source that's being gravitationally lensed into, say, two images of that object, so the light coming round the massive galaxy in the foreground one way, but also round the other way as well, so you see two images on the sky, those light rays are travelling on different length paths, and also they're going through different amounts of gravitational field. And those two things mean that the signals from the background quasar arrive in our telescope at different times. There's a time delay between the two images. So we see two images, both of them flickering, but the flickers arrive maybe a few weeks apart.
And by looking at this, you can see how the variations of matter falling into the black hole are occurring.
That's right. We can use it to study the supermassive black hole. We can measure variability. We can use the magnifying effect of these lenses, because gravitational lenses really are just like lenses. They give you a magnified view of the distant universe. But they also allow you to, if you can measure the time delay between the images, you can then figure out how far away the lens is and how far away the source is, it turns out. So this is very important. In astronomy, it's very difficult to measure the distance to galaxies. If you imagine looking at a picture taken from a telescope, it's very difficult to say whether something is in the foreground, something is in the background. It's very hard to say how far away things are.
So you mean if you had like a really bright source a long way away from you, and then a lot fainter source close towards you, but they more or less appear at the same time?
Yeah, how would you be able to tell the difference between those things if you didn't know anything about what you were looking at? So the gravitational lens gives you extra information. You know that the background object is in the background because it's being lensed. And if you can measure the time delay, you can work out how far away it is. And so you can make a measurement, a direct measurement of how far away the quasar is, and also how far away the lens galaxy is. So you can make a direct measurement of how far away the quasar is, and also how far away the lens is. And this is very interesting. We've known for, since the 1920s or 1930s that the galaxies, distant galaxies, are moving away from us, apparently at high speed. This was Edwin Hubble was looking at this in California, and he saw that the galaxies seem to be receding from us with some speed. And what he did was he measured the distance to some galaxies and also their recession speeds, how fast they were moving away from us, and used that to show that the universe was expanding. Right now, in 2012, we're doing the same experiment, measuring distances to galaxies and comparing with how fast they seem to be moving away from us. And now we can do it much more precisely. And we can measure these distances and speeds so well that we can detect that the universe's expansion is accelerating. So Hubble could see that the universe was expanding. Now we can see that expansion is accelerating.
What may be causing this acceleration?
Well, good question. nobody really knows what's making it accelerate. We have a name for it, but we don't know what it is. So we imagine that space is full of this stuff called dark energy. And it sounds exciting, but we don't know anything more about it than that. All we know is that there must be something causing the universe's expansion to accelerate. And so we've named it, which is, you know, the first step. But now we really need to understand what it is. So maybe perhaps the biggest mystery in physics at the moment is to understand what the dark energy is. And my little bit of research is helping here by making slightly more accurate measurements of the acceleration that might be able to help the theoretical physicists determine whether dark energy is this kind of thing or that kind of thing.
Because prior to this, the value that Hubble derived, the Hubble's constant, has been widely uncertain, people using a vast range of different values. But now, with this method, we can constrain that a lot better and then make better models and better tests.
That's right. With these time delay lenses, we can measure distances to an accuracy of something like 5%. And so they're similar to what you can do with supernovae, which you can also use to measure distance, and other techniques as well. So what we're doing is finding many different ways to measure distance in the universe, and each one of those tells us a little bit more about the accelerating universe and narrows down the possibilities for what the dark energy might be.
That is so cool. Supermassive black holes, distant galaxies, and also constraining the dark energy of the universe. Just how far, can I ask you about the question about how massive they are, how far away is some of the galaxies that you're looking at?
Most of the lens galaxies, the massive galaxies that are behaving like lenses, most of them are, we say, at redshift 0.2, redshift 0.3. Now, this jargon, what does this mean? Redshift 1 is about, you can think of as being halfway across the universe. Redshift 0.2 is something like 20% the way across the universe. So these are very, very distant objects with even more distant objects behind them. And that's really why we're able to say something about dark energy. If you want to measure the behavior of the universe as a whole, you have to be able to measure objects in the universe that are roughly, you know, halfway across the universe. I said that for finding very distant lens galaxies halfway across the universe, that Herschel was going to be very good. If we want to find more time delay lenses, we need to do something different. We need to specifically look for these supermassive black holes. We need to specifically look for time variable lenses. Now, most of the Herschel lenses won't have supermassive black holes behind them. Some of them will, but not all of them. And so if we want to find lenses that are good for measuring dark energy, we need a survey that provides images that are sharp enough that you can see the multiple images of the background quasar. And it needs to be big enough that you can find lots of lenses in, so you need to look at lots of sky. And it needs to be able to tell you whether the object is varying in time or not, which means it can't be just a static sky survey giving you just one picture of the sky. It has to be a survey that gives you many pictures of the sky over several years. And so I'm involved with a couple of projects to do this. And the one that I'm particularly excited about is a future project called the Large Synoptic Survey Telescope. So large because it's a big telescope, but it's also planning to do a big survey, half the sky. And synoptic means you can do everything with it. So what the LSST will do is take an image of all of the sky that it can see on a particular night. It will then come back to that patch of sky a few days later and then do the same thing a few days later after that, perhaps in a different filter, and then do the same, and again and again and again, and do that for 10 years. So what the LSST is going to do is to make a 10-year movie of the night sky. And you'll be able to sit there, play the movie, and look at all of the things in the sky that are varying. And so we'll see quasars everywhere that are flickering away, and some of those quasars will be actually two quasars because they've been gravitationally lensed.
I'm just imagining all the data and all the wealth of science that can come out of that survey.
It will be an absolute treasure trove. It's being designed and at the moment, and hopefully will be built starting 2015. And around 2020 is when it should start taking data. The idea is to try and make that data public and available to as many people as possible, and that's being sorted out at the moment. But hopefully everybody in the world will eventually have access to this cosmic movie and be able to dive in and look for interesting things. But it's a huge database. If you imagine not only just the images, but if you imagine making lists of all of the objects you can see in those images, well, we're talking about many petabytes of data, 100 petabytes of data this project should produce.
Is that the reason why now it's only becoming possible to do projects like this? Because we hadn't had the technology beforehand to store that amount of information?
We've got the technology right now to store that information. If you had enough money, you could go down the shop and buy, you know, some buy enough hard drives to keep a petabyte of data. So a petabyte is 1,000 terabytes, and a terabyte is 1,000 gigabytes. So this is, you know, 1,000,000 gigabytes times 100. Another way to think of a petabyte is that if you were to get a copy of every book that's ever been published, then all of that, to store all of that information in every book ever published, would take 1 petabyte. The LSST will give us 100 petabytes of astronomical data. So it is a huge database. So we could store it all now. The storing isn't really the problem. The problem is accessing it. Suppose you have 100 petabytes of data and you want to find, as I do, 1,000 gravitational lenses. So it's a problem of data mining. You can think of this enormous mountain of data, and I have to somehow get in there with a pickaxe and find 1,000 little gems.
An astronomical needle in a haystack.
Exactly, yes.
There's one other thing I'd like to talk to you about. Is these galaxies you're looking back, you're looking quite a long way back in time. Are you be able to detect any some of the very earliest galaxies to form? Was that not possible yet?
Yeah, that's something else you can do with a gravitational lens, actually. I don't work on this directly, but the methods for weighing galaxies, measuring the distribution of mass in galaxies, I also work a little bit on doing the same thing, but with clusters of galaxies. So if you imagine a cluster of galaxies, it looks like maybe 100 massive galaxies or a few hundred massive galaxies in roughly the same place on the sky. And in amongst all those massive galaxies, there's a lot of dark matter. So clusters of galaxies are the most massive objects in the universe. They weigh something like 1,000,000,000,000,000 times the mass of the sun, or you can think of it as something like 1,000, the weight of 1,000 massive galaxies. It's a typical cluster. And they make very good gravitational lenses. They're very big on the sky, and so they typically have lots of different galaxies behind them that are all being multiply imaged. And some of those galaxies are very, very distant indeed. And in fact, the most distant, or some of the most distant galaxies we know about that were emitting their light, emitting the light that we see, at a time when the universe was maybe a tenth of its current age, something like that. We're beginning to detect these galaxies now. They look very, very small, very fuzzy, very red, and we see them behind these clusters. And the reason we're able to see them is because the cluster is acting like a cosmic telescope. It's like having a giant lens on the sky that actually magnifies the view behind it. So you can look deeper into the universe with a gravitational lens.
Brilliant. Well, I wish you luck with all the data mining later on. And it's been fantastic talking to you.
Well, good to talk to you too. Thank you.